Hello, and welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Our program is designed for people learning English. We speak slowly, using simple sentences and a limited vocabulary. On the show today, Ashley Thompson and John Russell explore the delicious mix of flavors at a Uyghur restaurant in Washington, D.C. Interest in the cuisine is growing around the United States. As always, we close the show with an American short story. This week, we listen to another classic by the writer O. Henry. The Romance of a Busy Broker was published in 1906. But first, Anne Ball and I report about the process of impeachment in the American political system.
It is a constitutional question without a clear answer. Can a sitting American president be charged with a crime? The question has new importance as special counsel Robert Mueller investigates the Trump 2016 presidential campaign. He is looking into possible connections between the campaign and Russians who reportedly interfered in the 2016 election. Last week, it was reported that Mueller is using a grand jury as part of his investigation. Grand juries decide if government investigators may legally demand private records and information from witnesses. There was no information about when or whether Mueller would bring criminal charges in the case.
On Wednesday, the Washington Post reported that federal investigators searched and gathered evidence from the house of Paul Manafort, a Trump campaign manager. Mueller can prosecute any federal crimes linked to the investigation. In theory, that could include legal action against the president. Mueller is reportedly investigating if Trump obstructed justice when he dismissed James Comey as director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. If Mueller's team decides to bring charges against Trump, it could create a legal battle, one that could likely end at the Supreme Court. The Constitution lists conditions under which a president can be impeached and removed from office. But the Constitution does not directly say whether the president can be prosecuted or tried for a crime. Also, federal law does not say whether a president can be prosecuted. Courts have never ruled on the issue.
Eric Friedman teaches constitutional law at Hofstra University in New York. He says legal opinion is divided as to whether a sitting president can be charged with a crime. It's an important and unsettled question, says Friedman. He says the possibility of legal charges is another way to keep presidents answerable for their actions. Those who believe a sitting president is protected from criminal charges say it comes down to governing the country. A criminal charge, they say, could prevent presidents from carrying out their duties. That would damage the ability of the government to work. They say this is an understood constitutional principle.
Others argue that the Constitution would include clear terms of such legal protection for the president, if that is what its creators had wanted. These experts also argue that the Constitution clearly states no person is above the law. Kenneth Starr agrees with this view. He was the independent counsel who investigated former President Bill Clinton. In a Starr office memo recently uncovered by the New York Times, Starr said it is right, constitutional, and legal for a president to be charged for serious crimes that are not part of the president's official duties. In this country, he wrote, no one, even President Clinton, is above the law.
Impeachment is the process by which Congress brings charges against the president. It means Congress is the court that tries the president. Impeachment is a political, not legal, process, according to James Fiffner, a public policy professor at George Mason University. He believes impeachment is the best way constitutionally to hold a president accountable. The Constitution says reasons to impeach a president include treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. Congress alone has the power to decide what that means. What does it take to impeach a president? A majority of lawmakers in the House of Representatives must agree on impeachment for it to happen. The Senate then holds a trial, and a president could be removed from office if 2/3 of the Senate agree the president is guilty. Only 2 American presidents have been impeached by the House of Representatives, Bill Clinton and Andrew Johnson. The Senate ruled not guilty in both cases. President Richard Nixon was facing possible impeachment when he resigned. The next president, Gerald Ford, pardoned Nixon after he left office. As a result, the former president could not face criminal charges.
Now, some are questioning if a sitting president could pardon him or herself. Last month, The Washington Post reported that President Trump had asked his lawyers about such a possibility, although his lawyer denied the newspaper story. It appears the Constitution would permit a sitting president to pardon anyone for any crime at any time.
Thank you. American Grace Clegg loves to try new food. She recently ate at Dolan Uyghur Restaurant in Washington, D.C., with a group of friends and co-workers. There, they had what Clegg described as a delightful spread of common Uyghur food dishes: hand-pulled noodles, kebabs, naan, steamed rice with meat, and more. Before her visit to the restaurant, she knew little about Uyghur food, she said.
I'd heard of Uyghurs, yes, but it was always in an academic context or a political context, never in terms of the culture or the cuisine, the stuff that makes up the core of the people. And I think that food's a great way to learn culture.
Clegg says it is rare that she tastes something completely new or different from anything she has tried before. Eating Uyghur food, however, was one of those rare experiences, she said.
You feel echoes of other cuisines, but it all comes together in something new.
Uyghurs are an ethnic group in Central Asia. About 10 million of them live in the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region of China, a huge area in the northwestern part of the country. They speak Uyghur, a Turkic language that is similar to Uzbek, and use an Arabic-based alphabet. Most practice Islam. Xinjiang sits between China and Central Asia. It borders 8 countries, including Russia, Pakistan, and Afghanistan. It was an important area along the ancient Silk Road trading path. Uyghur language and culture reflects Xinjiang's history at the crossroads. So does Uyghur food.
Just 5 years ago, New York City was about the only place in America to find Uyghur food. But more recently, restaurants serving Uyghur food have opened all across the country. Last year, Houston, Texas got its second Uyghur restaurant, and the city of Boston, Massachusetts just got its first Uyghur restaurant. In Washington, D.C., 2 Uyghur restaurants have opened in the past 18 months. The growing presence of Uyghur food in the area led the Washington Post newspaper to ask, "Will Uyghur cuisine be the next big thing in the United States?" Uyghurs in the American restaurant industry hope that the answer is yes. Bakir Osman is one of them. He is the manager of Dolan Uyghur Restaurant. It opened last November.
We're more present than ever, and I believe we're going to be more present moving forward. And yes, I'm sure that it's just a matter of time before a lot more Uyghur restaurants start spreading or opening all over the place.
Uyghur cuisine combines the rich and hearty ingredients common across Central Asia with complex and spicy tastes favored in China. Bakir calls it a combination of everything.
We have lots of elements from the Central Asian ethnic groups like Uyghurs, Uzbeks, Kyrgyz and Kazakh, even Russian. And of course, there are elements of the, you know, from the Chinese food culture. It's a combination of everything. Middle Eastern, Turkish, Central Asian, Chinese, you name it.
Most Uyghur food dishes include mutton or lamb. Uyghurs are known across China for their lamb kavap, or kebabs. The meat is cooked on a grill and covered with cumin and other spices. Another traditional Uyghur food is lakhman, fresh hand-pulled noodles served with lamb, vegetables, and a spicy sauce. The name of this dish is related to the Chinese lamian, or stretched noodles. But no dish is more central to Uyghur food and culture than polo. Bakir calls it the lifeblood of man. Polo is a rice pilaf, a dish made of seasoned rice and meat and vegetables. Many Central Asian countries have their own version of pilaf. Uzbeks call it plov. Afghans call it palau.
The main ingredients in Uyghur polo are rice, carrots, onions, lamb, and oil. Other ingredients are salt, sugar, cumin, and water. Ekber Kaiser owns Dolan with his wife. He is also its head chef. On most days, Ekber prepares the polo at the restaurant. That means he must expertly cut huge amounts of carrots, onions, and meat at the start of each day, Bakir explains.
Carrots need to be sliced into the correct like shapes and sizes. And then onion needs to be sliced in its own way.
Polo is cooked in a large, round pot. After the ingredients are prepared, Ekber heats the pot on the stove. Once the pot is hot, he adds in a large amount of cooking oil. Then, he adds the onions and meat, followed by the carrots. The chef then waits a few minutes before adding salt, sugar, and then the water to the pot. This is when, in Bakir's words, it gets tricky.
After the mixture comes to a boil, Ekber tastes the mixture over and over. He then adds a little salt, and then sugar. Then he tastes it again and again, until the flavor is just right. Uyghurs do not use exact measurements in their cooking. To prepare polo, the cook must taste the dish every few minutes to make sure the flavor is correct.
When he or she feels right about it, then that's where it's right. So it has to be tasted and confirmed by the person who cooks it. There's no way to measure.
Bakir says polo should be strong in flavor. Once the taste is just right, Ekber adds the uncooked rice and spreads it around. Then he covers the pot. The mixture steams for 5 or 10 minutes.
After this, Ekber removes the lid from the pot and mixes the rice around to make sure all of the flavors of the ingredients are spread evenly. Then, he uses a chopstick to make holes in the mixture. This releases air and helps make the dish more flavorful. After mixing the rice and making the holes, Ekber lets the rice mixture continue to steam for another 30 minutes. Then the polo is served. It is often topped with cumin and a generous amount of meat. Some Uyghurs eat polo with a side of yogurt and a small salad made of cucumbers, onions, and other cold vegetables.
In Xinjiang, there are many different kinds of polo. Some Uyghur cooks add raisins or apricots to polo. Xinjiang grows a lot of both fruits. Others may add chickpeas, walnuts, or even hard-boiled eggs. Bakir says he can eat polo in whatever way at any time of day.
Well, honestly speaking, I would eat polo all day, long, and I'll never get bored from eating polo. Back home, I used to eat polo early in the morning, like 6, 7 o'clock. So it's not really a dish that you eat at a certain time for lunch or dinner, so to speak. But you can eat it anytime you like.
Along with being a popular food all day long, polo is commonly served at big gatherings, Bakir says.
Polo is traditionally served at like parties and weddings, gatherings, as a way of showing respect to your guests and to your friends or family. And it's also a way of celebrating or enjoying the rich cultural elements. I mean, in this case, Uyghur culture.
In his native language, Bakir says that he hopes Uyghur food continues to spread across America.
Uyghur
food is strong in both taste and smell. It gives people nourishment and strength. Therefore, we hope the American people like Uyghur food. We hope Uyghur food becomes an important part of American culture. We will strive to make it happen. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm John Russell.
Romance of a Busy Broker. Pitcher, who worked in the office of Harvey Maxwell, broker, usually allowed his face to show no feeling. This morning, he allowed his face to show interest and surprise when Mr. Maxwell entered. It was 9:30, and Mr. Maxwell was with his young lady secretary.
"Good morning, Pitcher," said Maxwell.
He rushed to his table as if he were going to jump over it, and he began to look at the many, many letters and other papers waiting there for him. The young lady had been Maxwell's secretary for a year. She was very beautiful and very different from most other secretaries. Her hair always looked plain and simple. She did not wear chains or jewels. Her dress was gray and plain, but it fitted her very well. On her small black hat was the gold-green wing of a bird. On this morning she seemed to shine softly. Her eyes were dreaming, but bright. Her face was warmly colored, and her expression was happy. Pitcher watched her. There was a question about her in his mind. She was different this morning. Instead of going straight to the room where she worked, she waited. She seemed not to know what to do. Once she went over to Maxwell's table, near enough for him to see that she was there. The machine sitting at the table was no longer a man. It was a busy New York broker.
"What is it? Anything?"
asked Maxwell shortly. Papers lay like snow covering his table. His gray eyes looked at her as if she were another machine.
"Nothing,"
answered the secretary, moving away with a little smile.
"Mr. Pitcher,"
she said,
"did Mr. Maxwell talk to you yesterday about getting another secretary?"
"He did," Pitcher answered. "He told me to get another one. Several are coming to talk to us this morning, but it's now 9:00 and not one has appeared."
"I will do the work as usual," said the young lady, "until someone comes to fill the place."
And she went to her table. She took off the black hat with the gold-green bird wing and put it away as usual. If you have never seen a busy New York broker on a busy day, you know little about men at work. Every minute of a broker's hour is crowded, and this day was Harvey Maxwell's busy day. Beside his table stood a machine. From this came a long, narrow, endless piece of paper bringing him business news as soon as it happened.
men began to come into the office and speak to him. Some were happy, some were not. Some were in a hurry, some were full of anger. Boys ran in and out with letters for him to read and answer at once. Pitcher's face now showed that he was alive. The other men who worked in the office jumped around like sailors during a storm. And there were storms in the business world, fearful storms. Every storm was felt in the broker's office. Maxwell moved his chair against the wall. Now he was like a dancer. He jumped from the machine to his table, to the door, and back again. In the middle of all this, he slowly realized that something had come near him. There was golden hair. There was a very large amount of it, high on a head. On top of the hair was a big hat covered with bird's wings. There was a long silver chain hanging from a neck until it nearly touched the floor, and among all these things, there was a young lady. Pitcher was beside her to explain. "Lady for that job is secretary," said Pitcher. Maxwell turned half around with his hands full of letters and paper from the machine.
"What job?" he asked.
"Job as secretary?" Pitcher said again. "You told me yesterday to have someone sent here this morning."
"Are you losing your mind, Pitcher?" said Maxwell. "Why should I tell you anything like that? Miss Leslie is a perfect secretary. She can keep the job as long as she wants it."
To the young lady, he said,
"There is no job here."
And to Pitcher, he added this order.
"Tell them not to send any more, and don't bring any more in here to see me."
The silver chain left the office, hitting chairs and tables with anger as it went. Pitcher said to another man in the office that Maxwell was more forgetful every day. The rush of business grew wilder and faster. Maxwell was working like some fine, strong machine. He was working as fast as he could. He never had to stop to think. He was never wrong. He was always ready to decide and to act. He worked as a clock works. This was the world of business. It was not a human world, nor the world of nature. When the dinner hour was near, things grew quieter. Maxwell stood by his table with his hands full of papers and his hair hanging over his face. His window was open, for it was the time of the year when the weather was beginning to turn warm. And through the window came a soft, sweet smell of flowers. For a moment, the broker was held there, without moving, for this smell of flowers belonged to Miss Leslie. It was hers, and hers only. The smell seemed almost to make her stand there before him. The world of business grew smaller and smaller, and she was in the next room, 20 steps away.
"I'll do it now," said Maxwell half aloud. "I'll ask her now. I wonder why I didn't do it long ago." He rushed into the other room. He stopped beside the secretary. She looked up at him with a smile. Warm color came into her face, and her eyes were soft and kind. Maxwell's hands were still full of papers. "Miss Leslie," he began quickly, "I have only a moment. I want to say something in that moment. Will you be my wife? I haven't had time to make love to you in the usual way, but I really do love you. Talk quick, please. I have to get back to my work."
"Oh, what are you talking about?" cried the young lady.
She rose to her feet and looked at him round-eyed.
"Don't you understand?" said Maxwell. "I want you to marry me. I love you, Miss Leslie. I wanted to tell you. So I took this moment when I wasn't too busy. But they're calling me now. Tell them to wait a minute, Pitcher. Won't you, Miss Leslie?"
The secretary acted very strangely. At first she seemed lost in surprise. Then tears began to run from her wondering eyes, and then she smiled through her tears, and one of her arms went around the broker's neck.
"I know now," she said softly. "It's this business. It has put everything else out of your head. I was afraid at first. Don't you remember, Harvey? We were married last evening at 8 in the little church around the corner."
That's all the time we have for today's show, but tune in tomorrow for another Learning English program on The Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Thanks for joining us.